Alright, so essentially yesterday, in the context of our desire to fully explore, or further explore, the topic of Pirsumei Nisa, so we did take note of a question that can be asked as far as the Dalekosos. How should we look at the obligation of Chazal to drink four cups of wine? Should we perceive it as a mitzvah of shtia? That the whole point is to drink so that we are able to show cheres, or transformation, as some of the Rishonim suggest. And therefore, the idea of four is to correlate to the concept of the Arba Lashonos of Geula, which are conveyed to us in Parshas Vayera. The other possibility is that it's not really a mitzvah of drinking per se, but it's a mitzvah of bracha. A bracha al hakos, and that since there are four mitzvos halayla that are candidates for that, so therefore that became the idea that we should recite these four recitations al hakos, and specifically that night, Chazal insisted we do it al hakos, while other times of the year it might be less crucial. We know that there is an association between the kos and being well off, being kingly, and therefore Pesach night, you can see why that would be particularly indicated. And we spent the time yesterday discussing about whether one nafkaminan might be the question of Shemei Ka'oneh. Is that a valid approach? And talked a little bit about whether or not Tosfos was advocating for such a possibility, and we talked a little bit about some different readings of Tosfos. The second question, which also connects to a position of Tosfos and is also discussed by the Brisker Rav, that may reflect these possibilities as well, has to do with the question of how much do you have to drink? And that issue is particularly important for people like me who are not huge drinkers, to put it mildly, so we kind of like to keep the alcohol level under control, or a minimum. So what is the minimum that one needs to drink in order to fulfill the obligation of Dalekosos? So here you find the Machlokes Rishonim as well. And Tosfos in the 10th Parak of Psachim understands that the drinking needs to be a melol lugmav, a cheekful. While other Rishonim disagree, and other Rishonim understand that it has to be either a revius or a kos that holds at least a revius. And then in both cases, we apply the principle of rubo kikulo, so either rov revius or rov of a kos that holds at least a revius. So if that's the case, that may also reflect such a differentiation, that maybe Tosfos, and more than maybe, and Tosfos seems to be using a model like we find by Kiddush, that Kiddush is bracha l'kos. And then we taste from the kos, so we taste the melalugmav, that's the shir, if we're tasting from the kos shel bracha. But according to the other Rishonim, the idea is to drink a kos. And the kos is therefore either an actual kos, with a minimum revius in it, or a conceptual kos, which is a revius. And again, with the principle of rubo kikulo applied to that. So that seems to also reflect this range of possibilities as well. Another interesting shaila that theoretically could come up, and we discussed yesterday a little bit, the obligation of matzah that's equally applicable to men and to women, Pesach night, and that has a nafkamina l'halacha, not just in the question of the matzah itself, but it has a nafkamina for berachas hamazon. That normally the rule is, we talked about this recently, in Purim time, we talked about al hanisim. So the rule is that if you forget yalav yavo, or rezei, so if the meal is obligatory, then you have to repeat benching. And if the meal is not obligatory, let's say it's Rosh Chodesh or Chol HaMoed, where it's recommended but not obligatory, so then, b'chatchila, for sure, you have to say El Yavo, but if you don't, you don't have to repeat it. So, Pesach night, it's clear that if you forget Yael V'Yavo, you're going to have to repeat Benjamin. And that applies equally to women. Rekiva Eger has a tshuva, one of the first tshuvas, in the very first tshuvas, the tshuvas of Rekiva Eger. So the question was discussed whether women are chayavos, Meikar Hadin is Simchas Yontif and Sudas Yontif, or if you say that the Mitzvah Sarsesha has Man Grama, and one of the Nafkaminas being, if a woman would forget to say Yael V'Yavo when benching on Yontif, is she obligated to repeat it? There he says, in general, no, she's not obligated, with two exceptions. Ritzei on Shabbos, because Shal Shudas is obligatory on women as well. And the Seder night, because Matzah is equally obligatory on men and women, so therefore, there as well, she'd have to repeat Yael V'Yavo. So this question could come up, men and women, the Seder night, if they forget Yael V'Yavo, which is also reasonably possible, considering that you might be significantly drunk by that point, and or tired, and or both, and a combination of all kinds of distracting factors. So, unless you're reading very carefully for your Haggadah, it's certainly conceivable. So, one would have to repeat benching. So, there was a question that was discussed. There was a prominent rabbi in England, Shnobek, wrote the Chuvis, Shraga HaMeir. So in those Chuvis, he discusses the question, if you have to repeat benching because you forgot Yael V'Yavo, so should you have to have another kos? And L'choru, that ties into this question, right? That if the issue is that it's about having kosos, so then you have your third kos. There's no reason to have it again. But if the idea is a bracha al hakos, so then, if you have to repeat benching again, so then l'chari, you should have to bench al hakos once again. Now, parenthetically, you could be machalik, and you could open up a different question. You could say, what is the reason that if you forget to say Yael V'Yavo, you have to bench again? Now, is it that your benching is disqualified? It's no good. Or maybe you could say, no, the benching is fine. It's the same benching you do all year round. It's just that the need to say Yael V'Yavo is so important that it justifies you repeating benching so that you'll have an opportunity to say it.
I thought it was, we don't have to repeat it on Rosh Chodesh because there's no chiyuv of suda on Rosh Chodesh.
Right.
Okay, fine.
What?
That's what you're saying.
Yeah, but you keep going.
Okay, fine. So I thought that it has to do with really more, it doesn't have to deal with whether the benching is okay, but whether there was a chiyuv suda.
Correct. The question is, what does that chiyuv suda do? So, does it disqualify the benching if you're missing it? So, you're saying that that itself should be kind of a riot that if it's about the chiyuv suda specifically, so then it's hard to understand how that could have such an impact in the Berachas HaMazon, that the Berachas HaMazon is now a disqualified Berachas HaMazon. I hear that. In fact, I think that Gemara in general does seem to create the impression that really the idea is if you have a chiyuv suda, it's the suda that becomes deficient without Yael V'Yavo. And the suda has to be in honor of Shabbos in the case of Rosei or Yontif. And if you're not going to say Yael V'Yavo, you're not going to identify the Yontif and the suda. So then how could you say that this suda is, how can you say that this Suda is in honor of Yontif when you don't even mention it? So really, the issue should be not in the benching, the issue should be in the Suda. So that's logical, but then it would seem to dictate that the halacha should be that if you forget Yael V'Yavo, we shouldn't make you repeat benching, we should make you have another Suda. So perhaps just Chazal understood that that was too much of a chumra to ask the people. But it would seem like that would be the logical outgrowth of it. I was wondering also if you could say, especially then in the context of Pesach night, you can only wonder what I was about to say, is that if you say that benching is fine, just as you need to say Yael V'Yavo, so then maybe you could say, you don't have to bench all the coast again, because you did bench already all the coast. Just because the need to say Yael V'Yavo, so you have to repeat it again. But maybe you could say, this is speculative, maybe you could say a little bit more, But if the idea is Pesach night, the mention specifically has to be halakos to express Chayrus. So maybe it has to be specifically the Pesach mention that's halakos. And that if your benching doesn't have the alvi avo in it, and it's deficient, therefore, from the recognition of Yantif perspective, so maybe that itself is going to somehow create an incomplete siruf with the kos, and therefore maybe we should say for that reason you'll have to bench again alhakos. So it's an interesting question. Lamaisa, I would assume one would probably assume sophic lahako, and especially because we don't want to add extra kosos at that point. And because the shayl is not 100% clarified, probably to not make another kos. It's an interesting question. There is also an interesting theoretical question. Just that it reflects these possibilities, not really a practical point. But the Gemara says that one is not yotze, at least the chiyuv of kosos. It's already an interesting language in the Gemara. The Gemara distinguishes between yayin and kosos. But one is not yotze fully if one has the kosos b'vasachas. So what does that mean, b'vasachas? What's the situation that you're not able to do that's not qualified? So this was in Machlokas HaRishon. Rashi says that it means that you took the kosos, took the four kosos, and you got a big novelty glass from the novelty store, one of those huge long glasses, and you poured all the dollar kosos into one big kos. So if you drank it like that, it's no good. And the Rashbam, his grandson, disagrees. And the Rashbam says, why would I even think that that's good? There's no upper limit to a kos. We discussed before about the minimum, but there's no maximum to a kos. So you can have the world's biggest kos. You're still going to be one kos. You could have a huge vat of wine, it's still going to be one kos if you could hold it. So why would we even think that could possibly be yotze in one big kos? So therefore, says the Rashbam, that's not what we're talking about. Rather, what we're talking about is somebody who does have four separate kosos, but he doesn't have them at the properly assigned places in the Seder. He has them all in immediate succession.
What does it mean, b'vas
achas? That's like a one shot right after each other, but not in the proper place, not in one big cup, like Rashi says. And not in the proper places associated in the kosos of the Seder. So, what is Rashi trying to protect, and what's the Rashbam trying to protect? Sounds like Rashi is protecting the issue of four, that your kosos have to have four separate units, and not one. While the Rashbam seems to be saying that the issue that we're trying to protect is not just the number four, you'll have that either way.
Placement.
But that the placement is crucial. So perhaps this represents these two different points of focus. That Rashi is worried about the number four, the symbolism of the four Lashon Sugula. And the Rashbam is concerned with the idea that the brachos, the mitzvos of the Seder, be avakos. And if you lose that, you're losing something pretty crucial. It's interesting, just in general, this dividing up of different themes in the kosos, the yayin and kosos and cheirus, the Gemara brings up as a separate concept. And that's interesting what possible nafkaminos of a halacha that could have. And there's one issue which seems like it's relevant to this upcoming year, but really I guess it's least relevant to this year than any other year. But we have a Shemitah year coming up. So the question of yayin shel shvi'is, use Shemitah wine for your Seder sound like it's relevant because of the impending Shemitah, but I guess it's the least relevant because we won't have the Shemitah wine yet by this Pesach, so we're actually the farthest away from the Shemitah year right now. The upcoming years, there's going to be a question. But if your family has no suffix to use Shemitah wine for a dalakosos, is that an issue? So why would it be an issue? Shemitah wine is kosher, what's the problem? So on the side of the page, the Korban Ha'eda suggests that maybe we know that there is, when it comes to Ulu Venesra, there is a requirement of Lachem, that you have to own the Ulu Venesra. And then there is often a discussion by many other mitzvahs you find in the posium. The question raised comes up by matzah as well. Do we have an obligation of lachem by that specific mitzvah? So in that context, the question maybe is asked that if you have wine, which is kosher, but you have restrictions on how you can use it, as is the case when it comes to Shemitah wine, you're not unlimited in how you use it, you have to watch it carefully. So, not watch it in the Shemitah Center, watch it so you don't have to waste it. So, does that perhaps indicate a lack of bias? That's how he understands the Yerushalmi's question.
Do we have a lachem for...
Doesn't seem like it. It's not that we certainly don't have an explicit lachem. It seems to be in the context of Dalet Minim, where the Gemara, where the Torah says it, Lakachta Machen, where the Gemara discusses it in Daf Yomi a few weeks ago, not so long ago. So, because you have that model, the question is then invoked by a lot of other mitzvos. But certainly there's no psukim at all telling us about the Dalet Kosos, so there's no drasha to be made of Machen.
Even the Dalet Kosos aren't really Torah.
Right, that's the point, right? So, you don't have any. Makor in a darshan possibly, but the question seems to be at least a hypothetical possibility. So our friend Nelson Gishtetman, that's all in his truvis. So he explained that he thinks the question is a little different. That it's not because of a presumed lachem requirement, which again we don't have a source for, but that since we have a fundamental ingredient of chayrus that is built into the kosos. So therefore, if it's lacking in cheres, it's going to be a problem. And maybe if there's restrictions on how you can use it, if you don't have the full ability to use this item as you normally would, maybe that's somehow lacking in cheres.
What are we restricted about?
You can't waste it, you can't sell it, you have certain limitations in terms of how you treat Shemitah produce. So that's, I mean, you're going to sell any of it anyway, but you can't waste it, you can't let any of it spill, which that's going to be a problem sometimes, in case that may.
So, is it considered wasting if it gets in the Haggadah?
It becomes a part of the
the Seder.
That's not after this, interesting. You know. We'll soak up all the chametz that fell in there from before, as we discussed the other night. Right, so then that would be considered wasting, you'd make it all also on any event. So, whatever it is, so that's, that maybe is a reflection of this aspect of cheres. It's interesting also that same halacha of cheres gives us a machlokus, the halacha, where it doesn't really seem to be a safe side. It seems like you can't satisfy all the shittas here. Now, let's say you have somebody, and as I indicated before, I'm a little bit in this camp personally, who doesn't enjoy wine, who finds it to be an unpleasant kind of experience. So, do you still have an obligation to drink wine at the Seder? So, Rav Moshe Feinstein is widely quoted. I don't think it's in the Tshuvas, though. He's quoted by his son, Rav David Feinstein, from his Haggadah, from the Kol Lodi Haggadah. But this got a lot of attention, publicity there, that Rav Moshe maintained that one must have intoxicated wine on the Seder night, because it has to represent this cheres idea, and that comes from its intoxicating qualities.
Meaning, not grape juice.
Correct.
But if it was 1% alcohol...
So I always assume that there's probably no minimum to what the alcohol percentage is, so presumably that is an eitzah, which I've also invoked in the past, that if you use the lowest percentage of alcohol you can find, then presumably, because no one says the mitzvah to get drunk at the Seder, the Purim we can discuss, or we have discussed, but no one said it's to get drunk. So presumably what Rav Moshe means is that it has to have the potential of intoxication if you were to have enough of it. So it's hard to know where you draw the line, what percentage of alcohol. Presumably low alcohol percentages would work even according to him. So I think that might be Hetzah for a little bit of a shar on this issue. But that seems to be his position, that it has to be intoxicating. While Rav Soloveitchik, who's quoted by Rav Schechter and the Nefesh HaRav and others, and that's where that was publicized. So it's really a focus by proxy, the Rav and the Kol Lodi HaGadah and the Rav in... and the Rav in Nefesh HaRav. But there, the Rav was quoted as saying really the opposite. That because of this quality of Cheres, and he has a Raya from the Gemara, it's not just speculative, he has a Raya why this is so, that if there's a requirement of Cheres, so something's going to make you miserable, so that would seem to be a basic flaw in Cheres, and therefore he said essentially the opposite, that somebody who finds wine extremely unpleasant would not be able to use wine, and would have to use grape juice. Question about that?
But so does that imply that he holds grape, because you don't want to have wine because it's going to make you miserable. That means that Rishabajik held grape juice to be more fashion, let's say, than the other drink you might enjoy more?
So I have a question. Would you extend to a Khamar Medina?
Khamar Medina, or let's say you want orange juice.
Right.
So grape juice better.
Right, presumably, grape juice is at least, you know, more some of the idea of Khamar Medina is a much bigger Kiddush that we find by Havdalah and the likes. Because, for example, when we talk about Kiddush Friday night, so grape juice was a huge machlokas there also, although Bisman Hazet has become much more accepted as a venue. So presumably it has to at least be a grape product to more closely match the Takana as far as that's concerned, I would assume. But just to state the position, so I don't take questioning it. So this was a machlokas. It's also quoted in the name of Gedolim, such as the Chibin Rav and the Chazon Ish, that both of them not only allowed grape juice, but used grape juice themselves at the Seder. Now, there does seem to be some strong rise for Moshe's position. On the one hand, you may be familiar with the statement in Chazal of someone who drank wine at the Seder and had a headache from Pesach to Shavuos. So it's... seems to be a riot that even somebody who's affected negatively by it is tired. Like I mentioned the other day, there was Amir Salvation was telling me that the idea of Pesach, or the name Pesach, is really represents not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu passed over the houses, but that he stopped on top of the houses, so to speak, in order to protect them. So therefore, the idea really shouldn't be called Passover, it should be called Hangover. Said that's appropriate because this is the one time a year that you have one. So that's what this Gemara tells us, that he had a headache, had a hangover essentially from Pesach Tel Shavuos. So it makes it sound like Nachanami's got to do it, and being the Shulchan Aruch, it says that even somebody who Yayin is Maziko, who has a bad reaction to wine, is still obligated in Dalat Kosis. So it does seem to, on the one hand, support Rav Moshe's position. However, it should be pointed out, as many have written extensively, that in the time of the Gemara and the time of Shulchan Aruch, so grape juice was not available year-round. So it wasn't necessarily an option. But nowadays we have refrigeration and we have grape juice that's available all year-round, so it could be that had that been around, that also would have been included. So in a Hanami, the person is not pater from Dalat Kosos because of this discomfort, but maybe Dalat Kosos with grape juice is an Eitzah. So on the one hand, like I said before, there isn't really a safe side for somebody who doesn't like wine, because it sounds like Rav Moshe would say in a Hanami it has to be wine, and the Rav would say it can't be wine, but that would be itself a problem in Cheres. The one possible shara, like you alluded to before, is that maybe if you have the lowest percentage of alcohol possible, and then you could also dilute it with grape juice, so you have a very small percentage of a mixture of grape juice and a low alcohol wine, so then presumably you'll have the lowest quantity of alcohol you can conceive of being in this cup, and then I assume Rav Moshe would accept that as well. Just one last point for the questions of that, maybe you should also say, in terms of the rayas, that the language of the Shulchan Aruch about Maziko and the like, I don't know if there's a chiluk to be drawn, and this may not help everybody either, but if there's a chiluk to be drawn between somebody who is fine when he's drinking the wine, but will have a hangover for the next 7 weeks, as the Gemara describes, or even the Shulchan Aruch says Maziko, it's Maziko the next morning, but at the time he's able to enjoy the wine, or somebody on the other hand who never gets any hana from the wine, even at the time that he's drinking it, it's a miserable experience. I don't know if there's maybe room to machalik as far as the shot is concerned between two different types of non-wine drinkers. Hi.
Can we talk about Yad Mevoshal in this context? Because it would seem that the reason that, at least according to Rambam and regular Kiddush, you're supposed to have something that's Roy for the staff or something like that for the.
So if you want, you could add a few words about that tomorrow. I'm not going to talk about it now because I want to finish this essential point before we run out of time today when we only have a few more minutes. If you want to say a few words about it tomorrow, especially if you want to go back to Bishul tomorrow, so I'm going to segue from Bishul to Bishul. So I just want to mention a little bit, I'll be there if I rush. A lot more to say about this. Again, we'll have to try to make a judgment call throughout the week how much time we have to expand on this theme. So just to say one point now, which kind of just reflects on the whole theme as a whole. So the way we essentially set up the question, that you basically have two choices. Either Dalai Kosos is because of the four Lashonis of Ba'ula, or it's because of the Mitzvah Salayla. So does that mean that if you say it's because of the Mitzvah Salayla, that the Dalai Lashonis of Ba'ula don't really have any connection here, don't really have any significant symbolism? So it is possible to combine the two. And that we direct your attention to a comment of the Meshech Chachma in the beginning of Parshas Va'era, which I'm only going to say over briefly, one, because we're almost out of time, but also, two, because it's a little bit complicated the way he says it. He says it a little bit in a different way, but I'll just briefly allude to it, and you can pick it up if you want to see it further. It's again the beginning of Parshas Va'era. So there the Meshech Chachma suggests that the two themes could really be merged, that there is a connection between the mitzvos halayla, that we do a halakos, and the dad l'shamas ha'gula. And that he suggests that basically there is a tziruv, that gula always requires a partnership between God and the Jewish people, and that God does an act of redemption, and we have to, so to speak, meet him halfway. So just to give you a little bit of a taste the way he says it, and you can look inside to see it more. Also, because it's a little bit confusing the way he does it, he counts the four mitzvos differently than we've counted it. He counts it as kiddush and benching and two halves of challah. He doesn't make magid one of them. So based on his breakdown, so he has a whole explanation how the Dalai Lashonis of Geula all correlate to the mitzvos, to mention the first two, which is simpler. So he says, for example, the Hotseisi, that if we want the Kadosh Baruch Hu to take us out of negative influences, so we have to separate ourselves. So that is what Kiddush is. So we do Kiddush in order to show our part of the process, and he does Hotseisi. So they say, Mitzalti, that God saves us from people who are trying to hurt us. So if we want to be saved, so then we have to make sure that we're not trying to hurt each other. So why would we hurt each other? So sometimes that happens because we have the scarcity mentality. We think there's not enough to go around, and whatever your other guy has, you don't get. So we start fighting each other. So the theme of Berachas HaMazon that God provides, so that addresses this, that we recognize there's enough to go around. God's going to supply what we need. So therefore, we're not going to fight with each other. So God can save us from outside threats because we won't hurt each other. So it's worth reading, and Meshech Chachma goes into this whole analysis of how you can say it different ways, but how the Dalai Lashonis of Geula correlate to the four mitzvos of the night. So if that's the case, so then we could perhaps also suggest that this could address the mysterious fifth coast. The Gemara at the end of Tzachim talks about the possibility of a fifth coast, which the Paskin is actually a shus, the voluntary fifth coast. It's a whole discussion, is that connected to the idea of the Kodesh del Eliyahu? Is that the fifth coast? There is a lengthy essay about this by Menachem Mendel Kasher, the author of the Torah Shlema, and many other very scholarly works. So he has a long essay about what is the fifth coast, and is it the same thing as the Kodesh del Eliyahu? Is that something else? But there is this mysterious, optional fifth coast. So first of all, if we have a fifth coast, so then we need a fifth Lashon of Geula. And so the Ravid is quoted as saying that that's the Hebesi. Now we have another verb, Tupsukim later, after the four Lashonis of Geula, there's also a fifth verb, the Hebesi, and that's the fifth coast. But you could say, maybe a little bit differently, that Tziv has another candidate, which actually is earlier, that maybe the fifth coast represents the verb of Yidatem, Ki Ani Hashem Elokeichem HaMotzi Etchem Mi'aretz Mitzrayim, that we should know that God is the one who took us out. So in that case, it kind of represents this idea that there's a lashon of geula that puts responsibility on us, that not just that God is redeeming us, but that we have to recognize what he has done. And perhaps that's why it's, so to speak, a reshus, because not everybody's on the madriga where they fulfill it. So the mission of this whole experience of the Seder night is to bring all these parts together and to reach that level of this voluntary fifth goal, so we got them, and to fully integrate the experience of the bilateral geula and to have that highlighted through the experience of Dalakosa. So again, tomorrow, maybe we'll say a few words about the Mavushal, and then continue with Bishal, and then Thursday, try to get as much of the different priorities. All right, everyone should have a wonderful day.